Blog Talk Radio.
YGP family and guests, thank you so much for tuning in. This is Ashley Goodman, and I will be hosting tonight's BYGP Locker Room Show. I'm very honored to be speaking with Mr. Joe Tapoa tonight. Joe has not only accomplished major things on a big stage and playing seven seasons in the NFL, but he is currently succeeding off the field and doing some big-time things with his company, Jump It Media. And at any point you guys do have questions for Joe, please call in. That number is 310-807-5195. And let's get rolling. Let's get Joe on the line. Hey, Joe.
Hey. How are you?
Hey. Good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good.
My last name is Tafoya.
Oh, Tafoya. Okay, I should have
asked you that before. Tafoya, like tough.
Tafoya.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me on that. Okay. That's why I said keep it simple. So, within this, so we're gonna have about 40 minutes, and I'll try to get you out by like 7:15 or so. But let's get started. Where are you originally from?
I grew up in the East Bay of California, a little town called Pittsburgh. It's about 30 minutes east of Oakland.
Okay, so Bay Area kid. And if
yep.
you don't know, with BYGP, we are geared for 13 to 19-year-old football athletes who are seriously, you know, wanting to play college ball. And, you know, our company is located in the Bay Area. So we definitely have West Coast kids listening in. So all of you out there, this is a Bay Area kid himself. So really, you did attend University of Arizona. Why? What was the right fit for you with University of Arizona?
When I was in high school, I was a blue-chip All-American and I was being recruited by many of the Pac-10 schools. But Arizona had the number one defense in the country at that time. It was known as the Desert Swarm defense. And the head coach, Dick Tomey, he came to my house. And he was wearing his cowboy boots and he was really relaxed dude. He came over and he pushed my coffee table off to the side and he sat right there on the floor in my kitchen. I mean, in the living room. And so I kind of fell in love with the dude, and then they took me on a recruiting visit out to Arizona. It's a beautiful campus. I meshed well with the existing team. They had a perfect spot for me on the defense. So
yeah.
I based it all around football, which in hindsight wasn't necessarily the best thing to do, but I really enjoyed my time out there, and I think it was the right choice for me personally.
Yeah, and so that gets me back. I mean, you were well-respected within your teammates. I mean, you were voted your senior year both team MVP and team captain, and your teammates did vote that. So it looked like you had the respect factor from your teammates. And so you say, you know, a big thing was the football aspect when you went to Arizona, but did you know what you were going to study once you landed, you know, on Arizona's campus?
You know, I thought I did. I thought I was going to get into engineering and I thought I was going to go into the school of business, but it ended up that you get into something and you don't really like it and I ended up studying communications and management information systems. So I went in with the intention of being an engineer, and I came out with a Bachelor of Art.
That is very interesting. That brings me to a point, because I was talking to Phil Olson, who was a 1970, defensive tackle for the LA Rams.
Yep.
And he was giving me some crazy numbers that was saying that on the average, college students take up 6 years to complete a four-year, degree, and they change their
right.
academic major 2.4 times. So I guess you were running in that circle. How long did it take you to finish?
I registered in my first year, and
okay.
I ended up graduating in 4.5 years. So, I was always a guy that was responsible. I went to class, studied. I did everything I could to try and put myself in a position where I was going to be successful. Now, it's hard. It's really hard when you're studying football and you're trying to achieve a college degree and you're partying and you're studying girls. I mean, that's a lot of responsibility on that. 19, 20-year-old kid.
Absolutely.
So I went in with good intentions on the whole thing, and then it ended up being, I graduated in 4.5 years, but a lot of guys that were my peers did not graduate and probably still haven't graduated.
Yeah. So within that, was it you pushing yourself that, academics was a priority, or did you come from a family that pushed academics, or, who was your biggest influence on that?
I was the very first of a long line of Tafoyas to go off and go to college. And my grandfather's got 17 brothers and sisters. All of them have 3-plus kids. And
okay.
we all live in kind of the same area. So it's a really big Hispanic family and very, very personal thing for me. And I I've got that personality where I'm going to be motivated and highly motivated to, once I set my mind to do something. I didn't really have somebody pushing me along the way because I never needed it. There were definitely
yeah.
people that helped influence, and there were definitely people that stepped in and helped at times of need. But as far as motivation, I was doing most of that. Some of my biggest influences, however, were professional athletes. I had a chance when I was young to – I had two separate encounters with two of my favorite players.
Really?
I met Lawrence Taylor at a very young age. And
wow.
he was one of my heroes. And I went and I was at an autograph signing, and my dad, we spent 3 hours in line waiting for an autograph, and about 25 people ahead of me, Lawrence Taylor stood up and he walked out of the room. And he walked right by me and right by everyone else, and I was so disappointed. I will never forget how disappointed I was. About 2 years later, I met with Ronnie Lott. Same exact situation. And Mexican family, we're going to be late to everything anyway. So we were late. And we got there. The line was out the door. He was only supposed to stay for half an hour. Ronnie Lott stayed for 2 hours. He ended up taking a picture with me. I got an autograph from him. I asked him a question. He answered it. And that always left a big impression on me. And so...
Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to be more like Ronnie Lott than Lawrence Taylor. And it's not a knock on him, not a knock on Lawrence Taylor, but I wanted to be more of that type of personality.
Absolutely, absolutely. So then, yes, you were ambitious and you were goal, oriented. Did you have an idea that, yes, goal was to make it to the NFL, or did you have other ambitions to do other things besides football?
Originally, I wanted to be an architect. That's why engineering and study graphic design and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So my passion at an early age wasn't necessarily football. But my brother, he was so passionate about football. And my dad and all my family, they're huge 49er fans. And
uh-huh.
Raider fans, and our every time we get together, it's about sports. And then it just started growing on me. I'd go and play at the park, and it just ended up that I was better than most of the kids. I was faster, stronger, better. And people started putting me in this category of being more elite, and I liked that.
Yeah.
And then it started, you know, developing respect around my family, around the community, and I liked that too.
Mm-hmm.
So at an early age, no, I wasn't that passionate about sports. But then when I began playing them and getting good at them, now football is my passion. It's my love.
Yeah.
I absolutely love football and everything about it.
Well, of course, you know exactly, you know, the business that you have created and everything of that nature. So then, you know, 2001, you were drafted. You were drafted in the seventh round by Tony Dungy and Tampa Bay. But soon after, you had an injury. That first preseason game, you had an ankle fracture and was released, but then picked up by my team, the Bears, and Dick Jerome. So tell us, when exactly in your career did you start thinking that maybe I should think about what I'm going to do after football and once this ends, or did you not think about that during your years of playing?
I think if that's the mindset you're going into the NFL with, you're not going to last very long. It has to be your life. And unfortunately, the lifespan of a professional football player isn't very long. I remember after I fractured my ankle in the preseason game, I was a seventh-round pick, so, you know, at least I got drafted, but it wasn't very high.
Yeah.
I went into training camp. You don't get much of an opportunity. Nobody really pays attention to you. You're kind of just there. You're kind of gray matter.
Uh-huh.
And I had a dynamite preseason game. I caused a fumble. I had, like, six tackles, one for a loss, and I made a game-changing play. And then I fractured my ankle. So the coaches are looking at this game film and they're like, wow, who's this kid? Where did he come from? And why does he practice so horribly but then play in the game really well? Maybe he's a gamer. Let's give him another shot. But I couldn't because I was sitting there with a broken ankle. And my coach came to me and he said, you know, Joe, have you ever thought about coaching or have you ever thought about what you're going to do after football? And I said, nope.
Wow.
And he goes, well, you know, this isn't going to last forever, so maybe you should start thinking about it. I'm a rookie. I just spent my entire life trying to get to that moment, and here's a guy sitting in front of me telling me that I should start thinking about something else. I didn't want to hear it.
Absolutely.
But as the years went by, you know, you have to start thinking about that because it's a business and it's a young man's game. The older you get, I think I was probably halfway through my third year before I ever started thinking about what it was going to be like to not play football anymore.
Okay, so and what was that moment? Did you injure again? You know, did you have an injury again, or what was that moment?
Yep, it was halfway through the season. I pulled my hamstring, and they brought some other kid in, and he was good.
Okay. Mhm.
And he took my role, and I was doing special teams, and I was playing backup on every single defensive line position. And they started giving him a crack, and he made a good play, and then another good play, and all of a sudden, here I am, just some dude sitting in the hot tub trying to stretch out my hamstring, and nobody's paying attention. And I started getting into business, and I started, you know, I was always the guy that people can talk to in the locker room. So guys would come to me and talk about their investments, their personal life, whatever, and at one point, there was a group of guys that had got into a bad deal. It was a real estate transaction, and they couldn't find their way out of it. And for some reason, it felt like the right thing to do. So I jumped in full speed, and I helped them out and got them out of the situation. Everybody made their money back. And after that, I just kind of, title stuck. You asked me earlier if I've ever had a nickname. Not really. But people did come to me very often with business problems.
Okay. That works. Mm-hmm. You should have told me that before. I could have said that instead of your last name. So within that, you have that second injury, you began to kind of see that football wasn't going to last forever. And then your seventh season, you were with Arizona in 2007, and that was your last and final injury that you had to retire then. Was that transition difficult, or because you already had the mindset of kind of having a game plan, was it stressful, or was it, traumatic for you? But tell us about transitioning.
It's very, very difficult. It's a very difficult thing to spend your entire life perfecting your craft, doing one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Learn how to take that fundamental strength that you build in the weight room and transfer it out to the field. You learn hand placement and hand fighting techniques and gap responsibilities. You learn how to shed tackles. You learn how to shoot the gap. You learn what the secondary is doing in a zone blitz coverage. And all of a sudden, none of that's relevant anymore.
Yeah.
You can't take those skills and transition them anywhere because you can't play football anymore. Football is over. And so is it hard? Yeah. And it was the single most difficult time in my life. I've had not some real tragedies, but a few, but it was the single hardest time in my life. I was sitting there in a boot. I like to call this my boot moment. And the team that I had just left was making their way through the playoffs, getting ready to go to the Super Bowl for the very first time in team history. All my friends are on TV, partying, celebrating, and I'm sitting there popping Percocet with my foot up in a boot. And my agent wasn't calling me. My friends weren't calling. My family, everybody kind of felt bad. Nobody knew what to say. And I'm just there. My wife played a big role in all of it. She's always been a big supporter of Joe. And together we identified that there are a lot of skills, a lot of things you can take with you in your transition. You learn how to fight, and you learn how to work hard, and you learn how to be on time and be diligent. And the trials and tribulations you go through trying to become a professional football player trump most other people in their early business lives. Whatever they're going through, they haven't gone through what you've gone through. You learn teamwork. Mm-hmm. You learn how to work with people you don't like. You learn how to take coaching, give coaching. And all of those things, those skills, are things that you can take with you into the next phase of life. And it takes some time to understand that. But once you do understand that, you once again become elite.
Absolutely. That was some great points. Guys, I hope you did hear everything that Joe was talking about. And using, the football and using the, on the field, just the demands of the game and being an athlete and taking all those years to craft, and make sure that you know what you're doing. But it comes to an end and you have to transition. So within that, did you feel that the NFL or what you had gotten from playing football was an opportunity or it helped you to, get other opportunities off the field if you
Oh, without a doubt. It was the single most difficult yet rewarding thing I'd ever done in my life. I'd spent my entire life chasing a dream. Most people don't ever chase their dreams. They are told one thing, they listen to naysayers, they're not given the opportunity. Whatever the situation is, they don't end up chasing their dreams. And so when I walk into a room full of business people, high-level executives or whoever, friends, family, people can look at me and say, that guy chased his dream, and he caught it.
Yeah.
He did something. And you know what? I'm very proud of it. And regardless of how long anybody plays in the game, if you make it to the professional level, you've done something special. And that something special is highly regarded. And now I leverage the hell out of it. I leverage it so much that, you know, people will call me and say, hey, how did you do it? How were you able to, you know, just the same way we're talking here, how were you able to take what you did in the 7 years of playing football? I was never really a starter. I was never the top guy on the team by any means. But somehow, some way, I just always found a way to keep making the team. I always found a way. And now when I'm done playing football, I put myself back on top.
Uh-huh.
So it's I walk around with the NFC Championship ring, and people love that. You know, it's a great conversation piece. I can talk about my post-career. And how many 26-year-olds, 27-year-olds can say that they're retired?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you're now already in your second career at the age of 26, 27.
I'm 35 now. That was back then.
Well, yeah. I do know you are 35. But tell us, did you do any internships before, you know, maybe not, or during the off season, or at any point did you do any internships before you even started your company?
You know, Ashley, before we talk about that, can I just tell you about one moment that really changed my life? And
absolutely,
it came from a very strange place.
Yeah, this is your stage, Joe. You take it.
Okay. So earlier we were having a discussion about, you know, taking some of those skills and some of those things that I've learned and done in football,
mm-hmm.
and transitioning them over. I just gave a speech last week to a room full of Boeing executives, right? And the topic was about leadership. And the conversation was about inspiring greatness. And
I like it. Okay.
There was a moment that happened to me in 2005. I was playing for the Seattle Seahawks. And we were getting ready to play in the NFC Championship,
mm-hmm.
against the Carolina Panthers. It's at Quest Field, which is now the loudest stadium in the world,
mm-hmm.
by the way. And I'm sitting at my locker. And I remember the locker room is shaped like a rectangle. And on the far side of the room, there's a digital clock that leads right under that. There's double doors that lead out to the hallway that enters the field.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly, this noise had been building and building and building all through pregame. And 30 minutes before the game, someone opened those double doors. And this noise entered the room, and everyone, the energy in the room completely changed. It was as if the room became alive. There was a noise coming from everywhere and from nowhere
really?
At the same time. And I got my shoulder pads on. I don't have my helmet on. All of a sudden, every one of my senses became awake. I was able to see clearer. I was able to hear. I could smell the tape on my wrist. I could hear Lil Wayne, Fireman, and Rocky Bernard's headphones that was next to me, and Metallica and Grant Wistrom's headphones on the other side. I'm every one of my muscles is firing on command, and it was because there's this energy that entered the room from the fans, and they called us into the tunnel, and it was go time. And all of a sudden, Mo Fetutupu, who's our middle linebacker and captain at the time, he yells out this blood-curdling warrior cry, and we all go running onto the field. And when the smoke cleared, you walk into an open arena of 68,000 screaming people. And it was so loud that day that the quarterback, Jake Delhomme, had no chance. He couldn't communicate with his line. He couldn't communicate with anybody. And that moment for me was sort of the pinnacle of my career. I made it to the Super Bowl, and I played in the Super Bowl, but that moment right there was life-changing. And the fans had inspired me in a way that they didn't understand. So
wow,
that moment, for me, I've always remembered that and kept that. And I always wanted to come back and do something with that moment. So you asked about the transition. I started a marketing company, and I ended up working with I didn't do an internship. I just did my own thing. I started a marketing company with one of my former players, and we launched a campaign to get all of the Seahawks fans to recreate that moment. And at one point in time, everybody was going to cheer as loud as they could inside the stadium.
Yeah.
And I was going to have the Guinness World Record officials there recording that noise. And they did, and it was the loudest crowd cheer ever recorded in the history of time. And President Obama acknowledged that moment when they made their way to the White House after winning the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. That is such a good story, because actually I was going to ask you why you started your company. Well, you and Kerry Carter had started and launched off Jumped It Media, and I mean, right there, that tells me everything and how much that moment meant to you. And now that totally makes sense of, you know, why you started Jump It Media. So I guess I really don't need to say what your purpose was. I understand that now. And I'm sure the audience does too. That was such a good story though, Joe. I'm happy to
hear
you. Yeah, that was fantastic. And that was more than I was expecting. I thought you were going to tell me it was just for fun, but yeah, that was fantastic. So then how did you and Kerry Carter join together with this then?
Well, I played against him in college, and he went to Stanford. And then we were all always kind of on the same trajectory. He ended up with the Seahawks my first year here, and then he went off and he played for the Redskins, and he went up to Canada and played. And by that time, I had already purchased my first company and was well into, you know, digital media. And then I hired him on as a marketing person, and our partnership and relationship grew. And then we started the Jump It Media marketing company together because we realized our strength was with people, not technology, not, you know, anything but people. It's a people business.
People.
And then people, when you walk into the room and I'm 6'4", about 260, Kerry's about 6'3", he's about 245, 250. We're big guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's an impressive sight to see, you know.
Yeah. So would you say, I mean, does your company have internship positions, or what would you say for young football players? Do you recommend that they try to get as much experience off the field as they possibly can, and get, you know, an understanding of what they may be into besides football?
I think, and this is just me speaking, and educators and mentors may not agree with this, but I think that you get such an unbelievable real-life experience by playing on a team, by being part of an organization that together is trying to achieve something, that if I'm an employer, and I am, and I'm looking at resumes,
hiring,
one of the first things I'm looking at is whether or not this person played a team sport. Because if they did, I know that they understand team dynamics, how to work with people, how to be punctual, how to respect, how to take coaching, how to give coaching, all those things I was talking about earlier.
Absolutely.
And that's not something you should hide on your resume. That's something you should put up front, and you should be proud of it. And I would say that if you're going to spend time playing a sport, like football or basketball or baseball or gymnastics, whatever it is, I say you dedicate yourself to being the best you can be at your role on that team. And that, in effect, will be the most beneficial thing you can do as a young athlete, is be the absolute best you can be at your position, at your role, and don't ever let somebody tell you can't do it. And the minute you understand that, the minute you understand that you are in control, you can go out and get a job anywhere you want to. You can get a job at Microsoft, at Amazon, you can get a job with the U.S. government. You can get a job studying abroad, or not studying abroad, but working abroad. You can work for Boeing. You can work for whoever it is that you want to work for. It's a personality thing. You walk into the
Absolutely.
Room with an ego, and you try and, you know, if you walk into the room egotistical and nonchalant, it doesn't matter what's on your resume. I'll take a team
yeah.
of guys that want to work hard, that are scrappers, over a team of arrogant Yale graduates any day. That's just me.
And it's not just you, because I've had many, many conversations with, you know, people who are hiring and looking and in those roles of management and everything. And, you know, being an athlete, that is an aspect that, you know, employers do like to see. They know exactly that you're driven, that you have the ability, like you said, to work with others, and mm-hmm. you know, I think you shouldn't hide it. I think you are right about that. That is something that you should be able to
you're
use.
Flexible.
And
it shows that you're dedicated. You're
exactly.
committed to something. You've participated. You know, those are all really, really beneficial things when you're working in the work environment.
Absolutely.
But more than anything, it's a self-awareness thing. Once you become self-aware that you can do something, you're capable of it. And I learned that through sport. Once you become aware of that, that's the single most important asset that you'll carry around with you for the rest of your life.
I totally agree. For me, you know, the classroom was difficult for me. I had to actually study and do my time. But with athletics, it became natural. But with that, you know, being good with the team environment and everything, it transitioned to the classroom or transitioned to, you know, your job and your career. So I totally agree and see where you're coming from and why you made that statement.
We're achievers. We are achievers.
Yes.
We went out and did something else. Just the same way you started this radio show.
Exactly.
You're hosting this radio show.
Nobody
had to smack you in the behind and tell you to go do it. You wanted to do it, and then you figured a way out how to do it, and now you're doing it.
Absolutely. So tell us, you know, now with Volume 12 and Legion of Boom being, you know, terms that a lot of people are aware of, tell us how your company, Jump It Media, had helped develop nationwide that recognition.
Well, first of all, everything is relationship-driven. So I'm in the Seattle community. People know me. I've done a lot of really good things. I do charity events, benefits. I do, you know, animal rescue, work with kids as much as possible. And all of those things are recognized. People recognize that. And they say, you know what, that Joe is a good dude, and he can help you. And somebody made an introduction to Richard Sherman. And Richard Sherman and his brother were in the process of putting together their very first foundation. This was 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And their foundation is known as Blanket Coverage Foundation. And we pitched them the idea of doing this softball game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's host a celebrity softball game and bring out guys like Larry Fitzgerald and Teal and, you know, bring some attention to this thing and get people to buy tickets, and all the money goes to your charity. They loved it.
Yeah.
So we did it. And the team recognized it, the fans recognized it, they all thought it was a beautiful thing, and it was very well received. Richard loved it. He's great with the fans and, you know, making himself available. Somewhere in there, there was a Nevada businessman who came to me and said, I have this trademark called Volume 12, and I want to do something with it, but I've been at this since 2009, and I haven't really gotten any traction. Can you help?
Uh-huh.
I said, well, let me take a look. So all his trademarks were filed. He said, by the way, I own this other trademark called Legion of Boom. I said, well, what the hell is that? Nobody knows what that is. So we got together after the Sherman softball game, after I had gained some public credibility and recognition for doing that. And I had this that moment that I was telling you about earlier that I always wanted to recreate. And Volume 12, to me, just seemed like the right platform to do that.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's a name that resonates, because Seahawks fans are known for being loud. The stadium's known for being loud. And we should find a way to brand that and give these people a title that they deserve. Give them
yeah.
a title. The world's loudest fans, right? Something to hang your head on. Very cool.
Absolutely.
The idea came to me at about 3 in the morning. And I'm sitting in front of my computer working on this campaign, and I said, man, I wonder what the loudest crowd roar ever recorded was. And I looked it up on the Guinness official site, and it was someplace in Turkey, and it was measured at 131.6 decibels or something like that.
Yeah.
And I said, I bet it's louder in CenturyLink. I should file an application. So I did it, and I didn't even think twice about it. And then about 2 weeks later, it was accepted, and they said, we'll see you on December 15th. Holy crap, what did I just do?
Wow. It only
everybody
took 2 weeks?
That we're going to be measured.
It only
yeah.
took two
Are
weeks for them to come. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's a very powerful thing. CBS is going to be there, all Fox Station, ESPN, all of these fans,
yeah.
there's public recognition. You know, Guinness isn't stupid. They're a business, too.
Absolutely.
So they... We had to hire, I had to fly out the Guinness official, which cost me about $8,000. And we did this thing, and it was unbelievable. The fans were crazy loud. Everybody received it well. I put forth a lot of personal time, and this was right when my son was being born. And all the same things that made me successful in football, I just fell back on all of that, the hard work, the tenacity. There were moments when the campaign should have ended, but we just fought through it. And
yeah.
I ended up, it was trending on Twitter for a little while. It was an international story. It got 3.5 million social media impressions. I had 1,800 of individual articles written about
wow.
it.
Wow.
Created such a stir because it was different. And my message
yeah.
behind the whole thing was, hey, if you're a fan, you matter. You're in this thing because you care about your team and your
yes.
voice matters. You're no longer a
spectator,
fan. You're a participant.
Yeah, yeah,
you're not
absolutely.
Spectating, you're participating. And that changed
yeah.
everything. And then the Kansas City Chiefs did it, and they broke our record, and we took it back from them. And it became this thing where if you wanted to activate your fan base, you do what Volume 12 did. And
exactly.
that's how Volume 12 became nationally and internationally recognized. And on
so,
the heels of that, because I had all
yeah.
the success going and built this huge fan base, I started introducing the Legion of Boom. Here's
uh-huh.
our Seattle defense, Legion of Boom. Talk with the players. What
yeah.
do you guys want to do with this? The Legion of Boom. And then
yeah.
they took it from there, and it's really their thing.
Absolutely. Well, and they've made it huge. I mean, we got photos at the Wazoo with LOB.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's definitely well-known. But you were pretty hot when Kansas City did break that record, and you were outspoken on why you didn't believe they had gotten, you know, the record correctly. Why were you so heated on that?
Because it was an original idea that I came up
uh-huh.
with. I spent a lot of time, effort, and money to get the Guinness people out there, to get the Seahawks to accept this thing, to get the fans
yeah.
excited about it, to get this whole big campaign in place. And then I basically created a template for anyone else to do it. And
yeah.
the reason I was mad was because the Guinness officials allowed it to happen. Like, let me revel in this for a little while. Don't give me 2 months.
Yeah.
Or even... I don't even know how long it was. It was maybe 2 weeks before
yeah,
somebody else comes in and steals
yeah.
my record. It wasn't very long.
Yeah, well,
I thought that was crap. And
yeah.
I found out the way that they broke the record was cheap.
The
game was over, and the fans were all leaving the stadium about two-thirds of them were gone, and they got everyone that was still there to surround the microphone and give it one final one, two, three, go. It wasn't like that. It was loud the entire game here at CenturyLink. But then we took it back and blew it out of the water. I don't think that record will ever fall.
Well, and what is the current record now, Jeff?
It's 137.6 decibels, which is louder than a 747 jet engine at 100 yards.
That is amazing. Like, seriously, that's so cool. It's ridiculous. Also with Oregon. Now, Oregon is known for their freaking loud stadium as well. Do you know what their loud record is? I thought they had tested it, but maybe they didn't. I know Oregon is the loudest within college ball.
They're loud.
But yeah, they are definitely loud. So
maybe
that,
it's a Pacific Northwest thing because we all drink so much coffee up here. Everybody's fired up. Who knows?
It's Seattle's best, you know. They're just really hyped up. So within that, I mean, now currently, yes, Seattle does hold the record. Would you say that having, you know, Volume 12 and the 12th Man, do you think that has dominated ticket sales, or do you think fans would have, if Seahawks haven't been winning or they haven't been as successful as they have been, do you think it would still be the same?
I think they go hand in hand. I think that early on, we did this thing at the very first game of the season against the 49ers, which my family from the Bay Area hated, by the way.
Absolutely.
It was this, hey, we're going to have a kick-ass season, and the fans are going to be thoroughly involved this year, and that's the way we started it. If you're going to come to CenturyLink, you're not just dealing with the Seahawks, you're also dealing with the environment, the fans.
Yes, yeah.
And then we launched this Facebook campaign and started connecting all the different Facebook pages where all the fans were living and showing one fan how crazy another fan was really gave people this sense of community. I'm not the craziest fan out there. Look at this guy. And they started traveling. The fans started traveling really well, and they started really supporting the team and showing them support in other cities, even to a point where in Arizona and in St. Louis, the Seahawks fans were chanting out and being louder than the home team.
Than the actual fans, yeah.
And then at the Super Bowl, the same thing. It was so loud in there, Peyton Manning wasn't ready for it. So the very first play of the game, the snap went over his head, and it was automatic 2 points. And the game never changed after that.
No, that was a ridiculous game, by the way. That was not even
when
it was
the ticket sales were pretty standard for the entire – I mean, for the opening game of the season, the home opener, which was against the 49ers. I announced this campaign, and we started talking about the world record effort that everybody was going to be involved. All of a sudden, ticket prices doubled. It was the highest single grossing sports game in NFL history.
Really?
Except for playoffs and Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The Seahawks, the attendance was the highest ever. So they broke a record for ticket sales and attendance in that same game that we broke the world record. So I think they all go hand in hand. And then
absolutely,
the team wins,
yeah,
and they kept winning. So I feel like I had a small part in the success this year.
Absolutely.
From the outside, you know? You can still make a difference.
Absolutely, and I think it gives the fans, you know, like you said, they're not spectators. They're a part of the team. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, in giving them that 12th man, you know, term, mm-hmm, I think that definitely shows that Seattle Seahawks do appreciate their fan base, and it's important for them to be recognized. So I definitely applaud you for all your efforts into creating this, and it's a definite, you know, great atmosphere to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Do you have something?
No, go ahead. I was going to say something.
One last question. I was going to close by asking you, what would be one piece of advice for young athletes, you know, who are striving to make it playing college ball? What would you tell them?
The same thing that I told the executives at Boeing. I would say, you're a leader, and it's your job to inspire greatness. And the way to achieve that is to be inspired. That single moment that I had when I was in my career inspired me to do something beyond football, beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. And it was because I was inspired in that moment. And so there are so many traps, so many potholes to step in along the way. But if you are inspired, you'll find a way around those things. And that's my message, is be inspired and inspire others.
Well, that is a great piece of advice. Joe, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time to speak with me and speak with our audience. It was great, you know, advice and information that you did, you know, give to us. So, again, thank you. You are always welcome back to BYGP, and hope to do more things with you. And good luck with everything, you know, with your company. And
thank you.
And with
you too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish your show a lot of success.
Thank you. And we appreciate that. And we will talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care, Ashley.
Bye. So thank you for tuning in tonight, guys. We hope you enjoyed listening to Joe and the advice he gave to help you future your future career on and off the field. We have some great things going on with BYGP right now, so please definitely check us out at www.beforeyougopro.com for more information. And if you have not checked out Before You Go Pro book, you definitely need to get that and read that and definitely, you know, take in as much as you possibly can while you're on this journey and reaching your goals. On Tuesday, we will be speaking with Coach Eric Jackson, who has 27 years of collegiate coaching football experience. And we will be talking with him about his company and how he's helping young athletes make sure that, you know, you guys are right on board with academically and being in position to play college ball. That show starts off at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. This is Ashley Goodman signing off with BYGP and the rest of the BYGP team. Stay in beast mode, guys. Make sure that you're staying on top of everything, school and all of your responsibilities. Have a good night.